Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Film Score Podcast. Today, my guest is film composer Nima Fakhara, who's probably best known for his work on the video game Detroit Become Human, in which he scored the Connor storyline. But Nima's also done a ton of films, and some of his recent ones include Becky, Survive the Night, The Night, and, gosh, a whole bunch of others. Somehow he's releasing 4 or 5 films a year, it seems. And I'm also told that there are some much bigger ones on the horizon, although he wouldn't divulge what they were. So keep your ears out in the next several months. Now, while we talk about some of his films, we actually go quite in-depth into his thoughts on diversity in film music, on being genuine, and just his general process. I think it was a really interesting conversation, and I probably could have gone on for another couple hours. And you can find more information on Nima by checking out his website or his various social media, in which he's very active. And, of course, listen to all his music on Spotify, Apple Music, whatever other streaming platform you want. Meanwhile, I might actually be releasing an interview ahead of schedule in a week instead of 2 weeks. I have a ton on backlog already, so I'm going to try to get them out a little sooner than normal and keep yours open. I'll sit back, and I hope you enjoy. Nima, I'm so glad you could join me today. You know, I know it's middle of the day on a Wednesday, so I'm glad you could carve out a little time for me.
Cheers, man. No, I wake up and write music, so like this was my break after another break. This is my procrastination, so it's totally fine.
So, look, it's been exciting seeing your work over the last probably year or 18 months, because you've had so much stuff coming out. And with the pandemic really screwing up productions throughout 2020 and early 2021, have a lot of those projects been things that have been done and just waiting to come out? Or have you still been working consistently throughout that whole time?
I've been busiest as I've ever been, funny enough. But at the same time, it's interesting because most of the projects were kind of either they were just kind of going into the pandemic or we were just kind of starting during the pandemic. You think I've done enough projects, just wait till like the next couple of months. You'll notice what I've been up to. Funny enough, a lot of my filmmaker friends, they're all kind of just those people that just want to go and make a film. They don't care how to do it. And it was like one of those things. I did Becky right as COVID was kind of just finishing, starting, was doing another movie, Devil Inside, which was called Shook 'em Hills at for a while. And I did that one. And then there's another one that I did. There's another, just like literally constantly. It was like, but yeah, it was one of those things that kind of was a therapy for me. It was just be able to kind of just come into the studio and just write. I've been doing that for a long time, but this has been my therapist. You know what I mean? During the whole COVID and kind of just all the mental shit that goes through it.
I mean, that's great. That's so fortunate, just because obviously not everyone had that. So that's awesome.
We were, it's funny because we had a baby.
Congratulations.
Thanks. So we it wasn't like during kind of COVID. He was born in July. So like January, February kind of hit. So that's when it was like, oh, he was crawling around. So we're lucky enough to have like a backyard and stuff. So for us, it was just like, okay, we're all home. So let's just hang out with the child. So, and it was that. I would just hang out with the baby and just write music. And it was just like this kind of weird little commune of just artists just writing, a bunch of kids just, no, we only have one kid. But it was like just a kid like crawling around, and it was just, that's what it was. And still we're kind of going the same kind of route, which has been awesome.
That's awesome. And yeah, I was curious how you balance that working full time, because obviously film composing is typically not a non-time consuming job. I mean, a lot of the times, especially when you're getting into crunch time, you know, you're working your butt off. So how's the balance between that and having a young child?
So I've had this kind of sort of a, before COVID, I had a studio in Marina Del Rey with composers in the studio kind of house. We had a mixing room and we had an entire stage. 6 months before COVID, I got rid of the studio and we got into this house. And this house, basically I have a guest house and this is where we are. But the balance is, I've always had this schedule of trying to be a 9-to-6 kind of a guy. I know there's a couple of other composers that do that. Whether I keep it or not, it's just pretty 8 hours a day. day. I walk into the studio at a certain time and I don't leave for a certain time. But the fun part about it is that if I get a little knock on the door, I'll be able to open the door and he could just walk in. And he's two now. So he's like kind of comes and sits on the couch and just like watches whatever Blippi or whatever on his on the iPad, or just like kind of just watches something as I'm working. And that was always my dream. That's why I got rid of the studio. And it's kind of funny because like he's 2 year old and he's has synthesizers and he plays with my piano and like knocks on stuff. And it's like, it's weird. But at the same time, this is just like the life of a composer slash father. But I'm lucky my wife works from home as well. So it's this balance of she's just taking care of him and kind of working, and same exact thing. I get to walk out that door and I'm with him, and I walk in and I get to lock the doors. That's the balance. Again, I'm a scheduled composer. I've avoided the voices in my ears of, oh, here's a melody, take it down. I still walk around with my phone and do that. But usually I'm a 9 to 6, 10 to 7. I go have dinner and then I come back in when everybody goes to sleep. So that's also the schedule too.
With setting those more regimented time frames, do you ever get in the studio or in front of the computer, in front of the instruments, and just sit there and not have anything come to you?
You know, I'm lucky that it kind of usually is flowing. And I'm a big fan of and a big advocate of first thought, best thought. So I don't lurk around in that realm of, is this okay? There's sometimes I just don't have time for it. I mean, I truly believe composers, especially in the media composers, were better improvisers than actual composers, because it's literally we're watching picture and we're trying to figure this out. So it's a lot of it is improvising and figuring out like what actually fits and not. Usually when I come in, it's there. You know, it's work as well. So at least for me, it's like, oh, okay, I got to make sure I get out 3 minutes a day. If I don't, I have to do 6 minutes tomorrow. But if I have that slump, usually I just move on to the next scene or move on to the, usually I have two or three projects going. So it's easy for my mind to switch from a comedy to a horror to a thriller to something else, to a video game or whatever, and go back and forth, you know?
And that makes a lot of sense. And that's probably one of the benefits of having all those, especially being in different genres. You know, if you had four projects and they were all like slasher horror films, you might be a little more in trouble.
Yeah, no, I mean, I hate to say it, but like I have an overactive imagination and I just need to feed it all the time. So if I'm not working, I'm doing something else. If I'm not writing music, I'm building a desk. Or if I'm not doing this, I'm in the garage, like, I don't know, figuring out synthesizers. Or I have to do something that my mind would be busy, or I write a script or start getting into fashion or whatever. It's all of those things that kind of I stay creative. And when I'm on multiple projects, it's literally that need of, hey, I'm on a horror film. I've been on it for 3 months, 4 months. What else can I do? And I mean, I like to call myself a chameleon of doing all of these different genres. And it's just been, that's what a real composer should be able to do. you know what I mean? I'm not comparing myself to Bernard Herrmann, Jerry, or whatever. I'm just saying it's like, at least as a media composer, if you want to put your title as that, you better, if there's a picture in front of you, you better be able to score it, no matter what the genre is, you know?
Is that a kind of need to have your creativity engaged all the time? Has that been something that's stuck with you since you were a little kid? And is that kind of what pushed you into music in the first place?
I mean, That's a very big question, my friend. No, I've always been a very musical kid. I started playing music since I was 5 years old, whether it was my parents' needs or my parents forcing me to do it. Imagination has always been one of those things. Me and my brother are like 8 years apart. So there was all this kind of just me by myself figuring out Legos, things to just kind of for me to create has always been one of those things. Music has been around my life. And it was like one of those things is, do I want to become a Persian classical musician and just play santur the rest of my life with a bunch of older people, no offense, or do I want to get out of the box and do I want to do what I've always wanted to do, improvise, break an instrument, go and figure out where is this unique instrument I could find out of, I don't know, Maharashtra, you know what I mean? Like that's what I love doing. And that's kind of came back to this. But then I've always loved storytelling. Storytelling is a very big part of our Iranian culture. So it kind of lends its hand to that same thing. And I get to tell a story with the helping hands of the other people. And that's the creative part about it that comes back to it.
That makes a lot of sense to me. Talking about Iranian culture, and you already mentioned this, that you play some Iranian, Persian, Middle Eastern instruments. And I don't want to get on like too much of a tangent of this.
Go for it. No, sure.
first off, how often do you try to implement those into your scoring? And is it just when it feels naturally? Or, I mean, personally, I don't think that there are a lot of Iranian Middle Eastern composers.
There is two of us. I know the other one. Then there is a half Iranian, half Spanish, Navid Hijazi, who plays violin for me all the time. Then there's Ramin Javadi, who's half Iranian, half German. That's it. But as far as classically trained film composers, I think I'm probably the only one, unless there's somebody else kind of just starting out. For me, I was a young kid starting in this kind of world of older Iranian masters. So I was always this kind of rebel kid going into these classes and just not understanding the repertoire or not memorizing it and just kind of improvising and going on tangents. And most of my masters were like, no, that's not right. But for me, the film music and kind of this media composition, it's always been colors, whatever those colors are, what are the unexpected colors. So like, there's a whole wall of instruments here. All of these are colors for me. Doesn't matter the region or not. I studied music anthropology, so I understand all of these cultures, all of these kind of perspectives. I'm doing something that we're using taikos and creating new drums and creating new languages for a specific region. I think it's appropriate for us to kind of just look at all of these instruments, especially for a composer to be able to look at it and be like, what are the limits of this instrument, whether it is from a specific culture, unless you're literally working on that culture. But I'll say this as well, as you probably already know, I'm a big advocate of authenticity, absolute authenticity for whatever you're doing. But in the same time, like, if you understand authenticity and you're actually dealing with a specific region, go for it. Absolutely. Go be as authentic as possible. But these are all just colors for me. Like, I'll put an amp on this dulcimer and just it'll sound like a really cool guitar. My hands just move faster on a dulcimer. Or like, I would take a frame drum from Iran, whatever, it's a big one or a small one, we'll detune it and it sounds like a weird taiko. You know, so for me, it's the goal of the colors, the goal of the sound, whether it's from this region or not, really doesn't matter. If there's a cool drone I could get from a Esraj, why not? It sounds cool. It works against picture. That's all that matters.
So that's actually really interesting. That's in one sense a little outside of what I expected. Here I was thinking, oh, you know, you can't use a hammered dulcimer in something like Detroit Become Human because
why not?
but that's exactly it. And then especially too, you're talking about it's not just sitting in front of a mic and recording the dulcimer. Like, there are a ton of things you can do to just totally change the sound. So that's actually really interesting.
Yeah, I mean, why not? The thing is that a lot of these instruments were created for composers to go and compose music. Whether I am a composer or not, quote unquote, I make music, whatever that music is. But the violin was created for players and a composer. So the composers were trying to figure out what the limits of this instrument is, whether it's small or not, then let's make it bigger. Oh, we got a viola. Oh, let's make it huge. Like, we got a cello. So if the cello was created, I don't know, in a specific region, would we call that the cello from that region? You know, that instrument is from that region specifically. Yes, sure. But what can it do in the world of media composition? It all comes back to the storytelling. If I'm trying to tell a story and this specific, I don't know, maybe a tuttari from India, if this beautiful horn that is only played in weddings, can it be played for funerals? You know, why not? You know, that's the fun part. If the story has just kind of, we're doing something really cool, why not? Let's try that. Or can we take a banjo and make it sound like something else, that it's something unexpected that the project will kind of have a signature to walk on? That's what I try to reach for. Maybe it's some acid and maybe it's some mushrooms. I don't know, man. But that's how it is.
Well, no, I love it. And I think from the listener side, a lot of the time you're listening to something and, like, take your score to the night, where you hear these walls of sound and strings and you listen and you're like, I could not tell you what's making those, but that's not really the point. Like, whatever it is, whatever you're doing, it works and it's scary.
I always say, if a single note piano works on a scene, it works. That's it. I mean, I'm on a movie right now, and then we just did this thing with 5 bass clarinets and 4 bass flutes. Again, I'm this non-classically trained musician that I love everything. So, like, I started understanding aleatoric music and chance music and generative music just for this. And I was like, okay, how do we kind of get in front of these woodwind players, and how do I create this air, and how do I just make these players play without me giving them notes? And we did that same thing with the night, because we're dealing with breath. deaths and we're dealing with things like that. So I was just like, here's a bunch of graphics. Go nuts. I'm fortunate to be able to do that, but you can still do it on a computer. I used to do that, you know, that you start kind of somewhere and then you go somewhere. But The Night is kind of the same exact idea. It's like, we're trying to create an atmosphere. What does this atmosphere sound like? And most of the times it's, again, it's like first thought, best thought. If I have a cello in my hand and it just starts playing and I'm like, whoa, that's creepy. Then it works, you know, it's creepy.
Staying in the authenticity realm of things, you know, I know that you are launching an initiative.
I was supposed to be launching it. To be honest, I've just been so busy that I haven't been able to figure out the requirements yet. It's all being done by myself. So it's this task that I've taken on. I mean, the initiative was just because of, I just saw a lack of it. That's what it was. Yeah.
So I know broadly the initiative is amplifying the voices and presence of Middle Eastern composers. I mean, like we just talked about, you can name off the top of your head the three Iranian film composers working.
Yeah, the reason I kind of wanted to do it, it's Middle Eastern kind of initiative. Doesn't matter if it's from Iran, doesn't matter if it's from just the region itself. The world of Middle Eastern and Iranian music, once I literally say that, the things that come into your mind is a duduk, is a dombak, unless you're trained a little bit better or you've trained a little bit more in the world of Middle Eastern music, then you go into kind of like, oh, there is a sitar and there's a sitar, but they're two completely different instruments. It's not more of kind of just me teaching these things. It's more for people to understand it. You know, somebody has to do it for everyone to kind of just understand what this culture is. But when you look at the Middle East on picture and you type in whatever, we're in Middle East, then what I'm trying to do is just, I just hope the composer doesn't go and grab a duduk and be like, we're in the Middle East. Welcome. That's what I'm trying to do. Whether this kind of takes on the other world of be as authentic as you can, whether the projects that you're working on, if you're working on kind of a South African project, make sure it's so authentic to that region as possible without your limitation of the, whatever it's on picture, obviously. But if you're going to do music from a specific region, go and understand it before you just pull in an instrument and just do it. You know what I mean? That's what I'm trying to do. And it's also kind of just letting people understand that it's not just about brown people or a person that has a beard. You know how to write music, whether it's with dombaks or not. I could get in front of a choir and I could make it sound like anybody else. You know, it's these cliches that unfortunately has been thrown at not just Middle Easterns, other kind of minorities or whatever, majorities even as well. So I'm trying to kind of just create this authenticity advocacy more than anything else, you know?
Is that, and you know, I don't want you to start naming names and publicly shaming people, but like, is that an issue that you've seen really rampantly in film music? I mean, because look, honestly, historically and even now, like the vast majority of your film composers are going to be like white guys from the US or the UK. And it's probably pretty easy to take a film that's set in Iran or India or China and like hit a couple instruments that everyone's going to be familiar with. And go, oh yeah, this is the instrument, like it's set in that place.
Love it. You know, if that's the scenario and that's what you have access to, I'm not going to name names. I'm not going to go into details, but not details. There's no details. You could watch it. But more it's this, if you have the assets and if you have the budget and if you have these access and you can actually go and understand this, if you're writing a music in Middle East, figure out where you are. If you're in Turkey, you're in Turkey. If you're in Saudi Arabia, you're in Saudi Arabia. If you're in Tehran, you're in Tehran. If you're in Afghanistan, you're in Afghanistan. Just like if you're in China, you're in China. You're not in Japan. Why do you and I kind of, as we're kind of chatting about this, and whether I understand it or not, whether you understand it or not, you could easily say, hey, Chinese music is completely different than Japanese music. They have similarities, but they are different. Why can't we say, hey, Saudi Arabia music is completely different than Afghanistan music? It's not the same thing. That's what I'm trying to say.
Oh, I mean, I think it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like when I get on a project and we are in New Orleans. I'm going to do everything in my power and figure out if I could find a detuned banjo that is specifically from New Orleans, that is from Bayou, that's from the region that I'm exactly that. I will go out and find a spoon that is exactly the way that the spoon players are playing it. That's what I'm going to try to do. Why not? Again, picture serves exactly what we need to do. If the picture requires you to go and stay in a tent for, I don't know, 6 months to understand a specific region of this group of people that live in middle of nowhere, that's the job of a media composer, you know? We're trying to tell the exact specific story of that character. So why not?
Yeah. I do appreciate the caveat you put in the beginning of both what the picture requires and then also the limits of what's around you. I mean, if you have a couple weeks and a small budget.
100%. Listen, if you have $5,000 on your music budget and it's literally just East West Raw or Spitfire sample libraries, that's all it is. But if you can go on Fiverr, for God's sake, go on Fiverr and type in literally the region, you'll find a bunch of musicians that are just amazing players. I discovered Fiverr because of that, because I was looking for things. And there are two rabbit holes in this world. One is YouTube and one is Fiverr. Both of them will take you amazing places if you actually let them do. And they could take you dark places too. But these rabbit holes are awesome to go down on. Hiring a musician for $20 and having them just jam through your track, it's kind of two sandwiches for that musician. You know what I mean? Why not?
I'll say there's a third rabbit hole, which is Wikipedia as well.
You know, I haven't gotten to that yet. You know, it's weird for me that people get to just kind of do and just change as much as they want. That's funny to me. I'll let you know once I go down that rabbit hole on my next procrastination periods.
Perfect.
YouTube can get you really dark, man. But like those 25-minute Vice videos are not going to watch themselves. You know, it's either that or Blippi on my iPad or just whatever TV. So I'll take Vice over that.
The other thing that I find interesting, and you know, you hit it right on the head talking about if you have someone that's set in New Orleans, you're going New Orleans specific because, look, we're in the U.S. We're not viewing the U.S. as just a monolithic country. And I think that's also the issue you get a lot of composers run into is they view Africa as,
sure,
oh, it's Africa. China, I mean, China's the size of the U.S., but there's, sure, you know, five times as many people. Like,
yep,
there are so many really, really distinct nuances, even within a continent or a country or region that, like you're saying, if you have the resources, man, you really better be narrowing it down.
You know, again, it all comes back to our job. You know, my job is to find new colors, to find new ways. If I'm not bettering myself as a musician or as a producer, composer, whatever, sound maker, if I'm not bettering myself in understanding what is out there, why am I doing this? Whether I'm going to go and find this amazing musician out of Iceland that's just making, I don't know, a synthesizer. Why are we not giving that guy some credit that he's putting himself out there and doing that? Or what if this amazing girl is out of this village of, I don't know, middle of nowhere, Turkey, and she's playing this amazing music from these amazing instruments that no one knows about? Let's look at it. Maybe I could learn something from it. Maybe I could learn a new scale that I could put in my horror movie. You know, it's all that. These things are just kind of for us to be able to make it into a Play-Doh of that. I did a movie. It was a horror movie called The Pyramid. It was for a bigger studio film. And even for a horror film, I went and was like, all right, how do I figure this out? Can I find a person from Egypt that would come and actually play for me? What are the sounds from that? I did pull a zurna. I did pull a duduk. I did pull all of those instruments in there. But then just I brought it back. I kick the piano, you know, but it's all that matters, you know, it's that's what it is. But then at least if you're able to throw some sort of authenticity to at least give a nod, hey, I did my job, I did my work, and I went and looked at it, I went and found it. Like, we have many composers that have done that. Ludwig, Hans, J&H, HGW, all of these guys have done amazing, amazing work, and they've done it. Why not? You know, why not us younger generation? Why are we not putting in the work? You know, it sucks when I see it. it bothers me so much, man. It bothers me so much. I'm like, ah, you missed an opportunity. I'll put it in a different terms, not music wise. Okay, so you could kind of get where I'm trying to get to, at least as myself, as an artist, a writer will start and they will take a pen and will they will take a paper and they would write, I don't know, serial killer in Seattle. Simple as that. They will sit with this idea for 6 months. Then it will go on to a script. Then after about 3 months, it goes to a director. The director will take it, take a look at it. They will sit with it, develop it for another 3 months, maybe. Then a casting director comes, then actors come in and they take this and then they sit with it. The producers come in, they go into shoot for about 30 days, 40 days, 50 days, 60 days. Then they finish and then they come to you and then the picture is locked or it's not locked and then they call, hey, we need music. Okay. And you're like, cool, no problem. When do you need it? And they're like, tomorrow. So what is the difference? The difference is that this writer has spent 3 years of their life with this story, with these characters, with each one of these. He knows, he, she knows, they know exactly what, when this person picks their nose, when they eat their breakfast. They know everything about it. When I am on a project, I try to do that in a much condensed time. I'm on this project. I want to know everything. I want to know everything about this person. I want to know where this person grew up, all the way to where is this ultimately going to end? When we go to black, what's going to happen 3 hours from now? You know, if I'm able to do that, if I'm able to kind of figure that out, whether it's me figuring out the region this person is from, me figuring out their story, me figuring out the background, whatever it is, that's all it is. When Ludwig went and tried to record all of these things, when I go record bass clarinets, and when I go study chance music or aleatoric music, I'm just trying to understand better. I'm trying to put my 10,000 hours in that project in order for me to be able to just go and play whatever on my fingers. You know, composers are, we're basically musicians that are always practicing. And literally the first time you see, you guys as audience see it, that's our final concert that's been recorded 400 times. The first time a director watches, that's my first time being in concert in front of the musician, in front of the director. So as a musician, as a guitar player, how many times do you need to practice before you go in front of a concert? It's that same exact thing. I'm trying to practice it under my fingers. I'm trying to practice it in my mind in order for all of this to kind of make sense before I give it to the director, because they've spent 3 years on this thing. Same thing with me. So all of these creativities and all of these things is just, I'm just trying to understand. Hans says it really, really well. He's like, it takes me a while for things to get under my fingers. And once it gets under my fingers, it's good to go. It's the same thing. That's why we write suites. That's why we write that 20 minutes of music. We're just exploring all of these things. We're just grabbing onto things. Once we write that suite, that movie's right there. You give me anything with those characters, I'll write it. That's all the exploration. I'm just practicing. These are all kind of these things that I'm just practicing before I go in front of a concert. You look at an athlete. When you're about to go in a marathon, how much practice they do. They go weightlift. They have a nutritionist. They have all of these things. We have the same thing. We have orchestrators. We have copyists. We have nutritionists sometimes. We have stylists. All of those are just kind of back and forth. I'm going to go and understand how I'm going to weightlift by going and studying this region of music. Or I'm going to go learn this new instrument, just like I'm going to learn how to tie my shoes again.
I think that's such a good way to describe everything. I mean, because it like suddenly it becomes universal for someone who doesn't even know film music exists. Like they sure. can listen to that and go, oh, like it makes total sense. But with that, and, you know, understanding the time constraint that you as the composer are under compared to everybody, well, not, I don't want to say everybody else, but like a lot of the other pieces in the process, I don't want to say, do you ever feel cheated, but do you ever get to the end and then look back and be like, man, if I had a couple more weeks, I'd have done this, or I'd have done that.
First thought is best thought. First thought is best thought, always. Always. Once I've learned that, that's the end of it. You know, first thought is best thought, and then if it doesn't happen, just keep going. It's not a disadvantage when you're on the project. It's a disadvantage when we're demoing. That's a big disadvantage for us. You know, again, we are... Us as composers, we're very competitive. We're a very competitive group of people, and that's lovely. I love that shit. But at the same time, we get a call after these 3 years that this director has spent, and they're like, hey, we're going to send you a scene tomorrow. We need this by end of the week. And you're like, cool, no problem. What is this about? And they're like, well, okay, yeah, this is about this person, blah, 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 blah. All right, cool, no problem. How long have you been writing this? Can I at least sit and think about this? You know, that's the disadvantage. Again, I come back to that whole thing of we're just very good improvisers. We know how to put our hands down on something and be like, this is sad. And unfortunately, this is sad when I go like, when I put my fingers on a specific three notes, this is sad. It works, unfortunately. If it didn't work, we would have to create again. And right now, it's these three notes are sad, and let's reuse it and reuse it and reuse it because it's easy. We don't have the time in order for me to recreate what's sad. That makes sense?
Yeah. And I guess as part of that, too, in the demoing process where, I'll be honest, I have no idea how many composers, a director, or a studio might reach out
to. It's crazy.
But look, you're saying it's these three notes, just play, you know, a slow, somber piano, and like, that's functional. It works really well.
Sure.
It gets it across. But when you've got a week, how much can you do? But like, it's also got to be the first thought a lot of people have as well, a lot of other demos. So how do you draw that line of doing something that works, but that's not super obvious?
For sure. I mean, I've a lot of people know me. I'm one of the most honest people in the world, and I say it as exactly as it is. On average, when you send a demo, you're dealing with like six other composers on average. So it's not just about the demo. It's not about the music. It's about a lot of other things. However, coming back to the demo, it's this idea of like, the demo is the hardest thing you can do. Whether you get the project or not, you're putting in so much and so little time, creativity, mentally, physically, emotionally. For a week, you're just trying to condense this 3 years, 4 years, whatever amount of time in this one minute of music to try to tell people, hey, I understand this character. I have 20 years of experience understanding this culture. I've done my studies of Western music, and I have this many credits in 1 minute. And then also, I have to tell you what the story of that character is in that 1 minute. That's what composers, that's how, you know, if you're really good at doing a demo, you're going to get a lot of jobs. But at the same time, we're just all very good at doing demos. So when it comes down to it, it's not about music anymore. It's about a lot of other things. But when you do it right and when you do get a good demo, a lot of times it has happened to me that I write a piece of demo and that piece of music that I wrote for the demo will never make it anywhere because our direction has changed. I've actually got to talk to the director and the director's like, this is great, but this is not what I was intending. I only hired you because it just sounded good. Or your package was better than everybody else. Or you just, I don't know, when I talked to you, you gave me a better sandwich after it. Literally, those are the things. Because listen, man, everybody, whoever is at least if I say, when we are up for a project, everybody is pretty much in the same category of composers unless there's a wild card in there. So when we send out a demo, we have no idea what we're trying to do. It's all usually blind because we're not getting information too much about it. We are like, okay, so here we need music like this other composer. And we're like, cool, no problem. Here's my take on that. But at least allow me to talk to you in order for me to represent me to you. Whether that's me as Nima writing a thriller or whatever it is, at least let me understand who it is. And it's just not me. I mean, composers, I wish this was a little bit more of a kind of a collaborative effort at the beginning of the job. You know, I love when I get on a project and I'm on the project beginning during the script stages. I get to write music with the director without picture. And it's like, hey, we're actually imagining what it's supposed to look like. You know, there was a time when composers used, I'm going on off a tangent, sorry.
Go for it.
Composers used to not be able to play anything for a director unless you were on the stage with the orchestra. That imagination is gone for a lot of filmmakers. Even for me personally, I don't know how to do that. I have no idea. I have to try it on the sequencer. I have to figure it out. I have to get my input unless it's like, hey, let's go and record 9 clarinets, you know? That's the thing. But coming back to it, it's literally just the demo process is more of kind of this condensed boot camp of understanding the story. And whether that piece of music that you write against picture is exactly right or not, it's literally not. It has to do with a lot of different things. And sometimes it just literally has to do how the filmmaker woke up that morning.
That's so interesting. And that's something that literally anyone listening will be able to understand, because look, that's like the any job search process. You know, someone sure. Looking at your resume, maybe they stubbed their toe 10 minutes before and they're in a bad sure. mood. Like, they're gonna look at it and toss yours aside.
For sure. In a lot of artistic industries, we do not have a blind audition process where you are presented as just your art. And you are literally, this is it. There is nothing behind it. There's no roots under it. There's no angels above it. It's literally just art. Kind of very similar to a painting. When you look at a painting, that's the finished product. Unless I go and search who this person is and what their history is and what they've done, I'm not going to know what this person did. Same thing. If you look at a house, the architect is an architect. You have no idea who that person is. When they pitched for that job, I wish it was that. It was, hey, I'm just sending you a piece of music. You have no idea who I am. I'm just writing you against picture. So let's make it that. Whether it's just the art speaking or not, I love that it's not just the art. There's a story behind every piece of art that's being made. But when it comes down to it, to these kind of demo process, to kind of come back to it, it's just really difficult because you might hit it off with that director and you might be getting drinks the next day, but that director might not be hiring you because they just have no idea what you are about, even though you're best friends tomorrow. And you're going to work on together on the next project, but on that project, you just have no idea what you've given them.
It's interesting you mentioned the idea of a blind auditioning process. I know that's something that various orchestras have been trying out because there's such a disparity amongst their membership. Is that something that you've ever encountered where it's just the demo?
I would love that. And I'm trying to make something of a platform that is able to do that. We have it a lot in other things. I've been a victim as well as I've been a winner of that situation when I go up for a project and it's not just about the music. And if it was just about the music, we would not be trying to have advocacy for these things. You know, if it was just about the music, we would never be talking about, hey, let's push this minority group and let's try to get them a little bit kind of, if it was just about that, if it was just about the art. Unfortunately, it's not just about the art anymore. But I wish it was. Blind auditions, I think, would level the playing field of the idea of that it's just the art, but it would also kind of make it very much of a disadvantage for a lot of different people as well. Some people are just really good at sequencing and that's going to sound amazing. And some people are just amazing orchestrators. So it's, and then they're just not good at sequencing. So that's going to sound different. But I mean, blind art could work in a lot of different things and it could not. I mean, digital art, people that do graphic design, you know, they're just kind of doing the same thing as we're doing. I like to compare us musicians and composers. We're a lot more of a fresh industry. I wouldn't be able to tell you how long we've been kind of composing, forever, whatever, 300 years, 400 years, whatever. Against picture, it's been very, very fresh. So we don't have a lot of those things as like graphic artists that they've established with tons of people in it. You know, we have probably 1,000 working composers, you know, and graphic artists, they're, you go on Starbucks, there's 3 graphic artists sitting there with their iPads. So our industry is still very fresh in understanding all of these things. And I wish there was a little bit of a better understanding for people at least getting into the business. You know, I still get students asking me, hey, how much am I supposed to charge for this? I'm like, wow, you should know how much you're supposed to be making as a composer. Just like, hey, I'm going to go work for Nike. You know how much you're going to make as a salary. And they've taught you that in school. They've taught you all of that stuff.
I think that's a really interesting point, and it's something that I've thought about at least with the form of film music, because it's been around for 100 some odd years.
There you go, yeah.
And like so much of it is still very much married to like the operatic Wagnerian leitmotif. Like, yeah, it works, but it's also, film is a different medium than opera as well.
Especially with even past 100 years, it has become a different medium.
Yeah, yeah. And I find like that's what's interesting. You look at the last couple decades, especially how much growth and change there's been as far as the like literal music being played. But I find it really interesting that even with a lot of music schools and universities having film music programs, that a lot of other things seem to be lagging really far behind.
For sure. You know, I was, this is going to sound like I'm shitting on UCLA, even though I'm not. you know, I started teaching at UCLA. And one of the reasons I was teaching is I have a lot of interns. A lot of interns come through my studio. And me being an open book, they've been an open book to me. And they've kind of talk to me about the system, the way that it is. Because this has been around for hundreds of years, and we are all been this kind of group of people that say, hey, learn the techniques before you break them. Unfortunately, there's no technique in media composition. There are techniques of you copying Beethoven and Bach and Jerry Goldsmith and Bernard Herrmann. But they were copying Jerry Gold. They were copying Beethoven. They were doing that. So our techniques are coming back to these Western cultures and Western music and Western, as you said, a Wagnerian kind of music. But we don't have a technique in media composition. I can't put it down on paper how you would score a love scene. It's storytelling. So why are we putting a, hey, you have to record an orchestra today? You know, I do it, but then I bring it back into the computer and I fuck with it. And I'm like, okay, this is it. This fits against picture. You know, a very interesting example. And I tell all my students to go watch is Justice League. Two different composers composed that movie. And two different, completely different movies are presented. It's a wonderful representation of what is possible against picture in a very big studio format and what two composers can do. We've seen it multiple times when composers have gotten fired and then we find their music. But it's such an awesome example of you seeing two different filmmakers working on the same subject matter. But again, I think a true media composition is someone that looks at picture or whatever, looks at the media that they're working on and understands it the best way that they can and represents that. Whether it's a comedy, you as a composer, if you're trained enough, you better be able to write a comedy if that's what's being asked of you. And that's a true composer. I could close my eyes and I could write a love scene for you. And I hope that's what you're trying to do. You know, it comes back to that whole thing of like authenticity. I'm trying to be authentic to that character. So I'm going to go understand you, whoever you are I'm talking to on the other side of Zoom. I'm going to try to kind of give you exactly who I am because you deserve that. Same thing on picture. I'm not going to half-ass myself, even though I'm getting paid half the money on the next job. You know what I mean? I'm still going to give you my authentic self because I'm going to give you everything. And I think that's what people should do in art in general. Understand it the best way possible and then break the rules, but still have your own self.
It makes sense. I think as a film composer, you're in a more difficult position than a lot of other artists are because you're not just painting a painting because like that's what you want to create. You're collaborating with other people. And at the end of the day, it's a director's film and there are producers and studios and all that. But yeah, I imagine finding the place where it's still authentically you amidst all of that is tough.
You know, they give us the canvas. They give us their shades of gray and whites. We're the ones that's supposed to figure out the rest of the colors. Sometimes they sketch it out for you. Sometimes your outline is there. Sometimes you have the person outline that's like, here's your hand. Here's where the house is going to go. But even then, you could look at Picasso and he's done the same thing. There's a house, there's a little lake, there's a human. And then you look at Klimt and he's done completely the same thing. There's a human, there's a little thing, and it still serves the same exact purpose. You know, I was watching this movie that I'm not going to name names, but it was Philip Glass. It was Philip Glass, not on a movie specific movie. And it was a very un-Philip Glass movie. And I was watching it and I was like, this is such an interesting way of scoring this movie because I would have never expected it. They went to Philip and they were like, hey, dude, give us who you are in this genre. And I'm assuming that's what he did. He was like, oh, I don't know how to do this. Let's figure out how to do this. What's great about it is that, you know, I was like watching it. I'm like, whoa, I would have never expected that. Same thing. Like you watch Social Network. You're like, whoa, I never expected that. You watch Soul. Whoa, I never expected that. Ben Wallfish. Oh, I never expected that. I would like to have more of those woes. I never expected that. But again, if I think it all comes back to this understanding of film and understanding stories and understanding the craft itself. I scored 30 short films when I was in school because I just wanted to understand it. I wanted to understand filmmaking. This is very simple. Once you get your 10,000 hours, it's a different life. It's a different life. It's in your life. It's who you are. I know what a love scene is. I've practiced it enough that I could, that I've mastered it. It's like when you're practicing religion, then you become an atheist and you've mastered religion. it's that same kind of guy. Like I'm good, man. I've understood how to write a love scene. But now what I'm trying to do is how do I not write music for a love scene? And how do I bring that world back? Can I put a hammered dulcimer in a love scene and I could still get the same emotions? You know, now it's about emotions for me. Now it's about there are multiple ways to skin a cat. And it's the same exact thing. There's multiple ways for me to tell you, hey, feel sad. I just have to figure out those frequencies, and that's about it. That's why our that's why composers are always going to exist, even though those machine learning amazing computers that are going to write music for us will be there. And I would love that's it's going to be amazing, and I'm excited for that. But at the same time, humans are going to be able to give the emotions unless we figure out something else.
And this is going to take us on like such a brief tangent that I wasn't expecting, but I find it really interesting that you're excited for the prospect of like AI writing music, because I think lot of people in music are the exact opposite. They're like, no, that's not real, that's bullshit, people are writing music.
Well, sure, we are writing music, but here's the thing, it's gonna make humans write better music. It's gonna make humans write a little bit more of interesting music. I worked on Detroit Become Human, and that was one of those things that I was like, I went off and I was like, all right, I'm gonna become as authentic as possible. And what did I do? Well, I was like, all right, how does a robot make sounds? What are these theories? What can I do? Can an actual robot create music? It's all about frequencies and emotion. If a robot is able to figure out these frequencies that go together and make that emotion true, there still needs to be someone that's going to massage it into place. But also what's going to be awesome is that a lot of the music that we are now getting that we're like, oh, we've heard this before. Those we've heard this before, we don't have to write those anymore. You know, we're going to focus on the other things. But at the same time, what I'm really excited about technology is that, again, we are a 100-year, as you said, 100-year industry that the only thing that technology-wise we've kind of gotten into is MIDI. That's been the biggest thing that we've ever had, and now VSTs and all that stuff. For us to imitate these thousands-year-old instruments that have always been created, now we can do it with a keyboard. What's next? You know, what's next? Can a computer control your emotions? I would like to see that. I would like to see adaptive music going through film. I would like to see things that are just like a little bit more kind of personalized to people. When you make a movie, it's more of a crowd entertainment. Especially nowadays, we're a lot more isolated. So I think these isolated instances of entertainment can be a lot more personalized. And I think these personalized things has to be done with technology that we just have no control over. There are chips that you could put inside your body now that control your vital signs. I would be one of the first people that would get it because I would know exactly what I'm expecting. Same thing with music, you know? If I'm playing a video game, if I'm playing Call of Duty, and it doesn't matter whichever one, if I haven't gotten my blood pressure high enough, we've lost the chance for the audience to get their pressure high enough in order for me to be able to tell my best story. So that's what I'm excited about. Technology is an amazing thing. We don't have that much in our music industry. We have 4K, we have 6K, we have 8K, we have 12, whatever. All of these things. We have people talking about surround audio, these things, but music hasn't evolved. We're still recording a violin the same way that we've been recording a violin. We are still putting the same exact strings on a cello that we've been doing for this many years. People get pissed when I go and record cellos with violin strings on it. But, you know, again, this is a playground for me. I play music. I don't make music.
I love it. And honestly, I wanted to get into a bunch of your films and specifics of cues and palettes and all that stuff. But, like, been chatting for a while. And frankly, this was, like, such a good, optimistic, excitement for the future moment to end on.
Dude, of course. I mean, again, like, If you look at the stuff that is happening now, there are some cool composers out there. I'm excited to see when the right project comes for them, what they can do with it. I'm excited for just people just running away from the traditions. And I'm also excited when traditions come back. Film composing is very much of a circular thing that we start from like very classical. We have these trends. We come back to them all the time. I've been around it many times and it's fun. It's really fun because like I'm like, oh, we're coming back to this. But like it's this trend of like going classical, modern. And we're in this cusp of like this change again. And then we're going to come back to it. It's going to be awesome. But our industry is a very kind of fresh industry, but at the same time, we as younger generations are supposed to be the ones that are kind of make this last for us and for our kids and for the little 2-year-old that comes into the studio. You know, that's who I was. I was this 10-year-old kid that used to play music. I was this 20-year-old kid running around studios. You know, that's who I was, and that's, I hope that's what we're going to try to kind of keep for the next generation, with real composers and people that actually want to do this shit, you know?
With real composers and with some AI thrown in the mix as well.
Oh, love that, man. Why not?
And listen, I love it. And like, I'm so glad you're able to join me. I had a great time talking. And now I was already in a good mood. I'm in a better mood for the rest of the evening, at least.
Anytime, man. I'm around. Anytime you want to chat, I'm around. We'd love to do this again anytime.
Excellent. Well, again, appreciate it. And I think it's only, what, 4 o'clock for you, so you still got the whole day ahead of you.
I still have 3 more hours to write another cue.
Well, I hope this was a good chance to procrastinate a little bit.
It was, absolutely. It was. I'm going to go watch another movie now before I write. But thank you, man. I really appreciated it.
No, and thank you, too.